to this week's episode of Tea with Lily. I'm your host Lily Mensebar, and joining me on the sofa today is Fola Kundahimbu, the socially conscious lawyer and chief executive of Fountain Initiative for Social Development, FISD for short. Now let's hear a bit about Fola before we get truly stuck in. A highly sought after social entrepreneur, Fola does diversity like no other. He has worked with and for various organisations within the public, private and third sectors, often touting the virtues of inclusion and nurturing human capital. Fola will share with us his journey so far, some challenges and successes, and more importantly, what the future might look like for him and FISD. Tea with Lily is a space for informal discussions with a relaxed format where we chat about topical issues over a cup of tea. Guests from all walks of life join me to share their experiences and provide tips and tricks for professionals and entrepreneurs interested in career and personal growth. Welcome, listeners, and thank you for tuning in. Hello, Fola, and thanks for joining me on the sofa, and welcome. So, a socially conscious lawyer with an enviable resume across Europe, Africa, and the Americas. You're often billed as promoting the importance of diversity within business to fuel social success. How did this journey begin?
I guess the journey began almost immediately when I came into the internet. And it was something that I was able to go on that journey because the way I was brought up in was very much around understanding the importance as the basis and successful coexistence amongst different people. So in a way, you could say that going on this journey was in my DNA. But much more on a practical level, growing up in Nigeria in different environments, my grandfather's palace, and also on my father's side and on my mother's side, you could see a whole range of things, and you grew up with that, where essentially they were kind of settling disputes were settled when people had differences. And so you pick up on some of those things and understand that actually sometimes it's not about whether someone has got a very strong case in terms of the evidence they have, or whether somebody has done right or wrong. It's about how do you, even in cases where someone has done wrong, how do you, you know, get that person to accept that what you've done is wrong, but in a sort of graceful way, so that it doesn't make them feel, they are an outcast or something like that. So for me, growing up with all of those things was something that I understood. So coming to the UK, and I'm sort of seeing how, I'm talking about 1989 now, so things obviously look completely different. Nearly 25 years later.
Yes.
Where the old issue around racial equal opportunities and all of these things were just kind of getting going. It was just difficult for me not to see how a lot of what I've learned in Nigeria around this, in those environments, will not be applicable here. It just wasn't something that was easy for me to accept.
And how tough was that?
It was very challenging.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it was very challenging. It wasn't a case of, you turn up and, the doors were wide open and you'll be ushered into the room to say, this is Fola and Joe Blogs, and, they've come here to talk to us about the business case of diversity and equality and inclusion and all of these things. Sometimes you will travel 3 hours to go for a meeting, and you get there and you're told that, you've only got 10 minutes. And you think, I've only got 10 minutes. I've traveled 3 hours. I was promised an hour. What am I going to do? So you spend your 10 minutes driving home the essential messages that you want them to take away. So that's challenging. And it could, in some cases, was a bit disheartening. But you have to, kind of go through all of that, and you have to plow through. And that was what I did in addition with some of the others that I was on this with. So it was tough. It was difficult. For me, when I look at it today, I'm somewhat disheartened is the word, not completely frustrated that younger people growing up today seems to feel that the battle is won, if you like. They can see people, people from African descent, African Caribbean people working in the city, doing all sorts of jobs and getting on. So you think, oh, actually, yeah, that is great. But all these things didn't happen because somebody thought, oh, great, let's have them in. All those things happen because some people stood up and essentially fought for it. But if you're talking to young people today, they'd be able to explain to you what it is, the frustrations that they're feeling, and how they see themselves
But when
in
they
this
speak to
environment.
you, when they speak to you, what do you think their frustrations might be?
I think their frustrations is seeing a lot of things happening around them, especially in London. London, to some extent, masks some of the other wider issues because there are a lot of foreigners in London, people that bring in money. And so when you look at that, you think, well, everybody else seems to be getting on apart from yourself. That's not really the case. But because they see that, they want to achieve all of those things very, very quickly. And so the frustrations are born out of why are we not getting some of the action, if you like. But the reality is you've got to create your own action. It's not going to be created for you, and you're not going to bulldoze your way into somebody else's action. They will kick you out. That's just the way it is. And so the frustration for them is, oh, how do we create our own action? And that means them understanding the basics and to some extent going back, taking two steps back to understand what it is that they need to be looking at today, and then actually coming up with some sort of if you like a framework of how they can actually navigate what is happening in the country today.
I can see myself creating another job for you as a mentor for young people who are coming through the ranks. So that is probably a show for another day.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you co-founded and chaired the overwhelmingly successful African and Caribbean Chamber of Commerce and Enterprise, which is called ACE, ACE for
Yes.
short,
Yeah.
which is headquartered in Bristol and has branches in London, Cardiff, and Liverpool. This is a not-for-profit organization which helps the African diaspora and entrepreneurs in the UK with various opportunities such as trade missions, business support, and legislative representation in Parliament. Can you please tell us a bit more about how this came about and what the future holds for the chamber?
I always say that the chamber, to some extent, is a child of necessity.
Mm.
So you add on one level, a lot of African business people here kind of struggling with their businesses, and you have opportunities in Africa. And so how do you take advantage of those opportunities
I
that were
see.
coming up? Everybody else seems to be taking advantage of it. The Chinese were piling in there. Everybody else seems to be going in there and having that. And we, African diaspora in the UK, perhaps in the United States, we're looking at how are we going to take advantage. So we started having a discussion about why can we take advantage of that? Some of us had already been doing some form of business in Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Gambia, or whatever, and also in the Caribbean, but in a kind of an informal way. We didn't see it as actually doing exports, if you like. We just saw it as doing something in there. So there was a link. There was something that kind of linked all of those together, and that was the fact that we were already doing something. So we decided to come up with a structure that would allow us to take advantage of what was happening in Africa, but in a kind of a very formal way, because we had been doing it informally in the past. And we looked at different structures and different ways in which we could do that. And the idea of the Chamber of Commerce came to us because Chambers of Commerce generally, people knew what they were. If you were in business, you would have known about the Chamber of Commerce, or if you never heard about it. You know that it's a membership organization. People come together to share ideas, to network, to trade with one another, and all of those things. And so it was a kind of a convenient vehicle. And that's basically how the Chamber of Commerce came about. So we started in Bristol, as you said, in about 2007, we were kicking out the ideas in 2008. And of course, from that starting position in 2007-8, we now have branches in London, in Bristol, Bristol obviously started in Bristol, in Liverpool, and in Cardiff. And we have about 3,000 business members now
That's a lot.
based in the UK, but also increasingly in the Caribbean and also in Africa as well.
I see. Whereabouts in the Caribbean and Africa?
We have membership in West Africa, in Nigeria, in Ghana, in Gambia. We have members in Uganda, in Kenya, in Rwanda, in South Africa, not so much, but obviously not so much in North Africa because of all the issues that's been happening there, especially in Egypt, which is the biggest economy in North Africa. But we do have members there. We essentially work through the chambers of commerce in those countries.
Okay.
So we go in there and we work with the chambers of commerce, Ghana Chamber of Commerce, Lagos Chamber of Commerce, Kenya Chamber of Commerce, because they are sister organizations. So it's easy for us to actually work with them to do the things that we want to do.
Okay.
In terms of the future, the chamber will carry on just because I'm not going to be physically present here in the UK does not mean that that is the end of the chamber. Of course, it's a membership
Yeah.
organization. There are directors based in those cities that I mentioned who will carry on the good work that the chamber has been doing. In essence, the chamber is a strategic organization. We're not there to deliver services on a daily basis. We're there to open doors, we're there to inform, we're there to open the doors that others cannot or will not open. We will do that. And so from that point of view, it's very clear what we need to do, and we will carry on doing that.
Fantastic. So ACE will continue to
Oh,
exist.
absolutely. There's no doubt
Good.
about that.
Good. So for like you've served at board level of charities and third sectors such as ACE, BBC Children in Need, and British Africans in Government. What are the common attributes of these organisations that make you want to support them instead of other charities?
And organizations. It's a very good question. Sometimes you think about it and think, why am I kind of drawn to one organization and not the others? I think generally, I would say it's the promotion of human community. These
Okay.
organizations are involved in bringing people together for a common good. Yeah. So when you look at the chamber, for instance, businesses coming together to say, okay, what can we do to help Nigeria, Ghana, or whatever, to help ourselves here, using trade and sort of investment
Yeah.
as the vehicle for that. So there's a common aim, and so that's very important. Also, for me, I tend to gravitate towards organizations who are interested in setting up institutions that will outlast them. So
Yes.
if I'm a senior, so you mentioned British Africans in Government. This is an organization that was set up about 6 years ago. Senior managers and directors working for central government organizations, and they wanted to, in a sense, come together and use the experience and the skills that they've gained working in large government departments, in terms of transferring some of those skills in Africa. They also wanted to exchange ideas and learn from one another. So for me, that's important because those guys are senior managers. They'll probably retire from civil service maybe in the next 5 years or so. But of course, other people come in can take advantage of some of those
Yes,
opportunities.
yes.
So for me, I'm always interested in institutions and how those institutions will be sustained in the longer term, rather than setting up something for a year or 2 years. I gain some benefits, and then once I get the benefits out of it, I go on, and I don't really care if it's existing after I've left. So that's one thing that I think is important. Also, I tend to promote or be involved in organizations that actually show Africa.
Yes.
You can remember some years ago, you and I were involved in an organization called African Referral Exchange, AREX,
Absolutely.
which you set up and you dragged me into. But that's a story for another day. But actually, you could actually say that AREX, in some ways, was also almost the forerunner for the chamber, if you
Yes.
like, because the old idea of AREX was to exchange, to trade with one another, to support one another.
Yeah.
And so, for me, that was great. It's not a Nigerian. Being a Nigerian, you would expect me to be very much a support Nigerian organizations. I do. But for me, I don't think in the UK you're seen as a Nigerian, a Ghanaian, a Jamaican. I think people think that people look at them in that way. Actually, when you have discussions with other people who are non-Nigerians, some of them don't even know where you're from.
Yeah,
They
it
make
doesn't
it. It
matter.
doesn't
It's
matter.
a
You look African, and you know, that's it,
That's it.
really. And in fact, a lot of people think Africa is one country, so they probably say to you, seriously.
I know that that is true.
I come from the school of thought that the more you expand the positives, yeah, the negatives, which would always be there, will become irrelevant. So it's
Absolutely.
not about removing the negatives. I don't spend my energy removing the negatives. I spend a lot of my energy expanding and focusing on the positives, because
Yes.
that is going to get you to where you want to get to. So what if there are one or two things that you are a bit uncomfortable with? It doesn't matter. Every country has its challenges. Every part of the world, they have their challenges. And so for me, I'm completely unapologetic about that. You know, I'll tell you about the way Africa is. If you want to take it that way, fine. If you don't want to take it that way, it's okay. But it's not going to make any difference to me in terms of the way I see Africa and the way I'm going to promote being an African.
Unapologetic.
Absolutely.
Is the word.
Absolutely.
I like it. Now, in the hearts and minds of those who know you and have worked with you, your personal brand is that of a diversity champion and vocalist.
Yes.
How does that resonate with you?
I think the diversity element, yeah, resonates reasonably well. Because if you look at my work history, my experience and things that I've done and all of that. So yes, I'm someone that's always promoted and championed the importance of managing diversity, recognizing diversity and celebrating it, because I think it does actually kind of bring the glue that puts them together in the community and in amongst different people. The vocalist, not so sure, but I think, I guess, in a way, if somebody looked at me and maybe some of the positions that I've held mainly in my work and also in voluntary organizations where I've had to speak and I've had to say things, then yes, in that sense, you could say, okay, yeah, he's a vocalist. I always feel that when you have an opportunity and you're given a platform to say something or to create an awareness or to change one mind or two minds, it's better for you to say something at that point in time. Even if everybody in there might not necessarily take what you say as a positive, they might kind of feel, why is he saying that? It's important for you to say that. If you pass it, you pass on that opportunity to say something, you go away thinking, oh, I wish I'd said something. And I meet people all the time, they say to me, oh yeah, but you said that and that, that's fine. You know, I have the platform, I'll say it. But when you get a platform, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in a big place, it doesn't have to be you have an audience of 500 or 100 people. It could be an audience of 4 people, it could be 5, it could be 10. Make an impact, make a difference. Don't say, oh, I'm not going to say anything because I'm not sure how this is going to be received. Well, if you don't say something,
nobody will know.
But in terms of the vocalist, I mean, you've known me for 15 years or thereabouts now. What do you think? What is this vocalist? How does that resonate with you?
Well, you're vocal with your thoughts, and you speak often for those who do not have a voice.
Okay.
And that's how I see it. And again, obviously, what people you say what most people are thinking without hesitation, and I think that's a gift. So that's why the vocalist comes. You speak for the voiceless, and that's how I see you.
Okay, that's interesting. Thanks. Okay, I'll take that on, but that's a new one.
A new one. Follow the vocalist.
Exactly.
Not fella, follow. Now, imagine that you're sitting in front of a careers office as a 16-year-old boy. Looking back, what would you have said you wanted to be back in the day?
It's interesting. I was never asked that question because in growing up in Nigeria and going to school, secondary school, the type of school that I went to, it wasn't really a case of what do you want to be, and my family background and all of that. So there are certain things that you have to be. Yeah.
Oh yes.
So you're either going to be a doctor or an accountant or an engineer or a lawyer or a scientist or something of that nature.
Everybody was put through what we call the civil service factory.
Exactly. So it wasn't a case of somebody sitting and say, oh, what would you like to be and all of that. In fact, if you're asked that question, because you don't want any aggro, you say, oh, yes, I want to be a doctor. Even though in your mind, you don't really want to be a doctor. You want to be something else. So those questions are never really asked. I mean, you're given a choice.
Yes.
So you have a choice of 5, and you just choose out of those 5, that's it, in terms of what you wanted to do. But I guess, funny enough, when I was growing up, my ambition was to, because I liked football growing up, I wanted to be, I didn't want to be a footballer. This is interesting. I didn't want to be a footballer, but I wanted to play in the World Cup final.
How could you have managed that?
Yeah, I didn't even want to just be in the World Cup, which is great in itself in terms of what I look at. And that has always also been part of my own journey from a professional point of view and also from a personal point of view, is these ethos around teamwork. In the World Cup, you have to work as a team. There are 11 players on the field. One player cannot do it alone. So you've got to work with others, and you've got to understand others, and they've got to understand you. So that teamwork, I suppose, is there. There's also this issue around, individual excellence. Even though you have 11 players, it doesn't mean that everybody has to dumbed down to the lowest common denominator. There's still going to be megastars even amongst those stars. So you have an opportunity to shine and show your gift in there. So that's something that I think is important as well to me in terms of having that opportunity to do that. Determination is important. You have to be determined in terms of expressing the best that you can give, you know. And also this focus on achieving an aim. If you're in the walk of, and the aim is to win it.
Yes.
And when I've read about people that have been in the final of the World Cup and they didn't win, they can't describe it.
Yes.
Later they will say, oh yeah, it was great, the atmosphere, but because they didn't win,
yeah,
it really pains them. It's like you win a silver. You think, yeah, silver is great, but actually I wanted the gold, you know?
Yeah.
And so that sort of focus on achieving something is important. And I guess those are all the things that, to some extent, I wouldn't say determined, but actually have been important to me in my own personal life. So when I look back at it and think about the World Cup thing and all of those things, it's not that surprising, actually, that I was thinking about it in that sense. I suppose in a way, it would have been, if I'd asked and somebody had said, why do you want to be playing the World Cup final? These are some of the things perhaps I would have said, I don't know. But that's the way I look at it.
Okay, but were you any good at football anyway?
I wasn't too bad, but there were many other students in my secondary school. They were far better than me.
Okay, this is Tea with Lily, and today we're here with Fola Kundahimbo, the chief executive of Fountain Initiative for Social Development. Fola also works with other socially conscious organisations on the benefits of diversity and nurturing human capital. Now let's focus on Fountain Initiative for Social Development, your recent appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So your passion for social inclusion and mobility has obviously been watched and envied by many, ultimately leading to your recent appointment as CEO for the faith-based organization in Lagos, Nigeria. How did this come about?
Out of the blue is the
really?
is the right answer. It's interesting. I, as you know, I've managed and run my own business, a consultancy business, for about 15 years, and I've done a lot of work in Nigeria, all over the place, and that's great. I've always kind of been looking to do something specific in Nigeria. There's a lot of stuff happening in Nigeria, and it's great, the energy in there. And I got to know about this organization. I was really blown away by what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, being a faith-based organization, being a Christian, that was important to me in terms of the ethos and the values that underpin. So that was important. But then when you go beyond that and see some of the things that they've been doing in Lagos and around what they've been doing, the breadth of what they've been doing, what they've achieved in the 10 years that they've been doing, it's just simply impressive.
Right.
So I was very impressed by that. And then obviously when I got to know a little bit more about it and spoke to the people involved, that also gave me the confidence that actually this is something that I want to be part of.
Okay.
Of course, the Nigerian factor is key, is very important. Even without that, if it was maybe in Ghana, that would have been equally attractive.
I guess as long as it was in Africa.
It was in Africa, and especially in West Africa, which I'm kind of familiar with. So that was important. But much more important is what the organization is about, what the organization is trying to do, and the successes that they've already had. So there's a legacy.
Yes.
Of success already. And I guess my role in coming on board is to take the organization, you know, to the next level.
Yes.
If you like in terms of what can be achieved. So it came out of the blue. It wasn't something I expected, but when it came, it wasn't something I was looking for, but when it came, I was glad it did, and I'm you know, excited about the opportunity to take it on.
So you'll shortly be moving to Nigeria for your new post.
Yeah.
What are the broad strategic objectives for FISD as an organization?
As an organization. Like I said in the previous answer, the organization, FISD is, as an organization, is new,
mm-hmm.
but the services that the organization is delivering has been delivered over the last 10 years in different guises. All that's happening is everything is being brought down under one umbrella with a management structure, a new management structure, and it's a slightly wider objective,
right.
if you like, in terms of the reach. So they've been working in Nigeria. So one of the objectives actually for FISD So they've been working in Lagos in Nigeria. So one of the objectives is to expand across Nigeria.
Okay.
Nigeria is a big country, as you know, 170 million people. We have 36 states. I think there are probably going to be more states created. And so one of the objectives is to do more work outside of Lagos, in Nigeria. So that's one of the objectives. The other objectives, really, from a strategic point of view, is to use partnerships, I think the phrase we use in the organization is collaborative learning, which I think is great because it means that actually you can learn from one another. So we're looking to set up, and we're in the process of registering FISD as a charity in the UK.
Okay.
And that's to take advantage of the fact that we can make use of some of the diaspora skills and experience and that we have here and expertise and use it around some of the programs that FISD delivers. So that's one of the objectives, to ensure that we're able to use the talent, an African talent, wherever we can find it. And there is a lot of talent in the diaspora. So we're going to be looking at doing that. Working with mainstream organizations is important as well, global organizations. The organization has a global outlook. It's not just limited to Africa. And that's great for me. Again, going back to issues around excellence, I don't see any reasons why anyone that wants to check out what FISD is doing, they want to check our systems, our processes, and cannot come there and actually measure what we've done with any other organization anywhere in the world.
Okay.
For me, that's important. So it's not the case, oh yeah, it's an African organization. Yeah, it's based in Africa. But actually, when you look at the standards and when you look at what we're doing in terms of our processes and our governance arrangements, it's comparable to any organization. So it's about developing this organization as a 21st century social enterprise in Nigeria,
right,
using some of those elements.
Wow, I can't wait to see all the changes that will come about. With an extensive career in business and an involvement with community-based initiatives around education, entrepreneurship, and empowerment, which areas will you focus on with this new appointment?
The organization has broadly four areas, FISD, has probably broad areas that they've been working on. One of them is entrepreneurship development. That's very important to me, and that's something we're going to be focusing on.
Why entrepreneurship?
It kind of maybe goes back to my early involvement on the equality agenda. And also being trained as a lawyer as well in the UK, you kind of get this feeling that the way in which you're going to achieve equality is through legislative remedies and provisions. Actually, that only achieves a little bit.
Okay.
The only way in which you can achieve equality, and this obviously came to us later on, is around economic equality. And you cannot have economic equality if you're reliant on others. So you need to have your own base. You need to have your own structures that you rely on.
Yes.
That is almost, you're feeding in and it's feeding out, and people can buy into it, give their skills, their experience, and they can also take out of it. And so for me, entrepreneurship is key. Entrepreneurship is not a big deal, really. I mean, anybody.
It's scary for some people.
It is, but people always think, when people talk about entrepreneurship, what they are thinking is being a successful business person.
Yes.
And actually, that's not what it is.
Tell us more.
That's not what it is. You can have different levels of success.
Mm.
I may say that, okay, I've developed a new IT system, a new software, or something like that. And so I want to have all the economic and commercial benefits of that IT system, and I want to be a billionaire. That's right. One way.
Mm-hmm.
I could equally say, actually,
That's Bill Gates, right?
Yeah, that's Bill Gates and some of maybe the IT sort of entrepreneur. But then when you look at the others, some people have also developed IT software that has been used by others, and they've said, actually, you know what? We're going to make this open for anybody to use, and we're not even going to charge for that. So some of these open source software that have been developed that people can use, and you don't even have to pay for that. So there are different levels. It doesn't mean that once you become an entrepreneur, it will automatically lead you to become a billionaire. And so if you're not a millionaire, people think, oh, I'm not a successful person. Do you see what I mean?
I do.
It's not about that. It's about you being, first and foremost, an entrepreneur must have a sense of doing something, yeah, They must have a sense of being self-reliant.
Yes.
And that's the key thing. Mm. It's about you not relying on others, saying, look, I want to make something happen, and I'm going to find a way to make that happen. Yeah. And you wake up in the middle of the night, you think about something, and you keep on tampering with it, and you're doing all these things. It's a lot of hard work behind that. You mentioned Bill Gates. When I read about Bill Gates and what he did, sometimes there's an element of luck in you being an entrepreneur. When you look at Bill Gates, he didn't actually, in the beginning, set out to create Microsoft, and Microsoft was going to be the biggest, richest organization, the company in the world. That perhaps came later on when, you know, some marketing people got involved and said, this is what we want to be. For him, initially, it was the intellectual challenge. So he was growing up in Seattle, and he was messing around with, you know, coding, and him and Paul Allen coding and everything else. It was lucky that at the time, the only computer, if you like, that he could use to do the coding was in a library that wasn't far from his house. But he couldn't use that computer because it was being used by the people that worked in that library. So the only time he could use it, which it was free, was between 12 o'clock at night and 5 o'clock in the morning. Now imagine this. This is a, I don't know, 14, 15-year-old boy waking up in the middle of the night at 12 o'clock to go to the library, to use that computer between 12 and 4, because that was the only time he could use it, and the diligence and the tenacity and the discipline for somebody of that age to do that. That was what gave him the edge. So he had the opportunity, and he took advantage of it.
Yeah.
Now, there were other kids who were coding at the time. They couldn't be bothered to wake up at 12 o'clock to use that, that computer, because it was free to use. But he did it. He and Paul Allen did it. And that was what gave him the advantage. So he was exposed to what nobody else in the country was exposed to at that time. And so that gave him the edge. He was lucky to be living in Seattle. Mm-hmm. But all the other elements that makes a successful entrepreneur were present, and he took advantage of that. So sometimes you're lucky. You just happen to be in the right place at the right time, and you come up with something, and it's successful. Sometimes you come up with something, and it's just not the right time. It's not. So for me, youth entrepreneurship is key, because mm-hmm. if you look at Africa, and actually anywhere in the world today, youth unemployment is rampant. We talk mm-hmm. about it in this country all the time. It's much more chronic in Africa, where 50% of the population is under the age of 19. So Africa has a population of 1 billion. So you have 500 million people under the age of 19. Probably another 100 million to add to the 500 million. So 600 million people under the age of 30. That is incredible. Now, that is an advantage that Africa has. But we've got to be able to come up with a way in which we're going to, you know, use that opportunity, that advantage. If we don't take advantage of it, well, other people will. Because all of a sudden, these guys will come into Africa and set up all sorts of factories and things. And then they'll be taking advantage of the young skills that we have, which is what is happening now with Chinese in terms of taking advantage of that. So youth employment is youth entrepreneurship is something that I'm going to be focusing on, especially about entrepreneurship generally. It's about helping, giving people the opportunity to start something, to be self-reliant, not to rely on getting a job or not to rely on somebody paying them a salary or whatever. Of course, vocational skills training is something that I'm also keen in living. And so having vocational skills, whether it's in carpentry, it's in hairdressing, whatever it is, you can still earn money. You can be self-sufficient, whatever you have. So I'll be focusing on that as well.
Okay.
For FISD, they also have the whole idea of personal development and employability, which is ensuring that if you do want to get a job and that's your thing, you are ready in terms of your mind, in terms of your appearance, in terms of working on that. So those three areas I'm going to focus now on the last part that FISD does, which is the education, which is working with.
Oh, that's great. So we all know that you have this wonderful knack of mixing business with political engagement by getting politicians to listen to the needs of voluntary organizations. Mm-hmm. Are we likely to see more of this when you move to Lagos, Nigeria?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't really get a lot of things done without some sort of political engagement, you especially in a democracy. And that's what Nigeria is. You have a democracy since 1999. The politicians have regulatory and statutory responsibilities. So to get certain things done, you need to have political engagement. You need to let the politicians and to do how you're trying to. And I mean, politicians being who they are, whenever they see an opportunity that they feel is going to help them get more votes come the next election, of course they'll go for it. That's just the nature of the business, and that's what politics in terms of rules. So yes, you will engage with politicians, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you buy into everything that they're involved in and all of that. I'm not a politician
never
at all. No, to some extent, my background rules me out in a way, because
okay.
We don't kind of mix
social engagement.
But, you know, to some extent, most people who have some sort of interest in social engagement usually have two ways of doing it. They either go into politics or they become social critics or social vocalists and things like that. But on a personal level, I come from a background where we have the royalty element. It always ends up, if you win, they would say, oh well, yeah, because you had some connections, that's why you won. And then if you don't win, or some, and you do win and something happens, then people then kind of look at. So personally, our family, we don't sort of get into politics, but yeah, definitely you talk to politicians and you engage with them and get to understand where they're going, coming, and use the opportunities there to better what you want to do.
Okay, so from your perspective, Fola, what does a successful FISD look like for the next 5 years?
Oh, that's a very good question, and it's one that my board and my chairman they were asking me.
I know. Yeah. You have to deliver.
Presence in more states in Nigeria in the next 5 years.
Yes.
I would say maybe between 30% and 50%. We have 36 states now. If you're present in the next 5 years between 10 and 18 states, that would be good. That would have been a good improvement and a good
That's success. Quite high.
It is, but like I said, I aim, you know, I don't aim low. I aim to sort of deliver what I feel is achievable. But of course, it might be difficult to achieve some, it would be challenging, but it's not impossible.
Absolutely.
We're also looking to have presence in more states, in more countries in Africa. I've already identified one or two others that will be doing that. We're looking at having partnerships with other organizations in the EU, Africa, America, and in the Caribbean as well. And also the African diaspora, really using them to good. We're going to have a diaspora engagement program. They would allow people who are based here, who come to Nigeria either on business on holiday, and they have some free time and they want to either train or they want to come and give a workshop or they want to give some of the people on our programs, and then they obviously we'll get them to do that. So my own personal goal is largest, if not the largest, social network.
Okay.
I don't see any reason why you can.
Great. Are we likely to see the reversal of the brain drained initially from the FISD perspective?
I hope so. I hope so. And they call it the brain gain.
Brain gain,
It was a drain and now it's a gain. I sincerely hope so. I mean, you were at the event when we had the launch for FISD last week Monday in London. And that was really a statement by the organization to say that we have this global outlook. We are not afraid to come to London and say this is what we're doing. And I would like you to be part of that. People were very interested in doing something back. So certainly, we are hoping that the brain gain would continue. And if we are part of the facilitation of that, great. Or that's all well and good.
Fabulous. This is Tea with Lily, and today we're here with Fola Kundahimbu, the Chief Executive of Fountain Initiative for Social Development. Fola also works with other socially conscious organisations on the benefits of diversity and nurturing human capital. Now, you have a very strong commitment to supporting the voluntary sector. Is this going to continue when you move to Nigeria?
Yes, it will. And actually, there are loads of, you know, voluntary organizations in Nigeria doing all sorts of wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
In the area that we are going to be operating in, which is around, we've already sort of talked more about the benefits of social entrepreneurship, which is beginning to gain steam now, actually. So yes, definitely, that will continue.
Looking forward to that. Now, whilst the UK will be losing a great talent like yourself, Fola, Nigeria will be welcoming back one of her sons. How do you view both homes?
Yeah, again, that's an interesting question. It's one that I've been asked before. I mean, growing up in Nigeria and coming to the UK to study, work, and having gone back to Nigeria to work over the last 10 years or so, you almost kind of feel both, you belonged in both places. Obviously, the UK is a much more globally diverse country. London, especially, is a very, very incredibly. There's some things that you can get in London that you simply can't get anywhere else. And that is a draw. And you can see that when you just walk around London, you see what is happening every day. And that's a great thing. I mean, if Lagos can be like that, that would be fantastic. And it has the possibility of being like that. Because Lagos is a global city. I think it's probably the largest city in the world now because of the population. It's about 20 million people in Lagos.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a huge place. It's congested, definitely. It shouldn't be as there shouldn't be as many people as 20 million in London, in Lagos, but that's what we have. I view both places as sort of my home, if you like. But of course, if you asked me, I would always choose Nigeria. Nigeria obviously is my soul. I was born, I grew up there. It's a great place. I would continue to view both places as my own, but you know, my first home, if you like,
is Nigeria.
Is Nigeria, and it's great that Nigeria is welcoming back one of our sons and Gay that we talked about earlier on, and I'm hoping that more of those will happen.
Fab. Now, how can our listeners connect with you if they want to get further information, such as contributing their time, talent, or even cash to FISD?
Yeah, I mean, our website is pretty much www.fisdng.com. So you just type in fisdng.com, it will come up, and you'll be able to, there's more information there. You can send us an email on the contact form. But if you wanted to send an email directly to myself to say, okay, well, I heard you speaking and, you know, I want to do X, Y, Z, or I want to get more information about this and it's not on your website, again, just send me an email at fola@fisdng.com. Or just send us an email at info@fisdng.com to those queries.
Right. Wow, what a journey. We've certainly heard so much about this journey and obviously your aspirations for the future, Fola. We wish you all the best with your work for FISD and, of course, your continuing work with ACE. And if we can be of assistance in any way, do call, text, WhatsApp, tweet, email, or just come and have more tea with Lily.
Indeed.
Listeners, if you have any questions for Fola, again, please send an email to fola@fisdng.com or lilyabot@gmail.com, and I'd be more than happy to pass a message on. Tune in again for the next episode of Tea with Lily. My guest on the sofa will be the maestro of improv and performance management evangelist, Elvin Box. He's energetic, inspirational, quick-witted, and down-to-earth. If you want fluff and no substance, then Elvin is definitely not your man. I'm your host, Lily Menteibar, and until next time, keep smiling and always, always, always